Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm speaking with Mark Feldstein, who is the teaches media and public affairs at George Washington University and is the author of a new book, Poisoning the Press, Richard Nixon, Jack Anderson, and the Rise of Washington's Scandal Culture. For two decades, he was an award-winning investigative correspondent for CNN and ABC and other news outlets. Thank you for joining us on Background Briefing, Mark Feldstein.
Oh, always my pleasure, Ian.
And today has been a bad day for NPR. The chief fundraiser for NPR was caught in a sting by this fellow O'Keefe, who already stung the Acorn people before that, and was arrested posing as a cable repair guy in the offices of Senator Mary Landrieu down in Louisiana. And nevertheless, this apparently gullible chief of fundraising for NPR listened to this pitch, was talking, willfully negotiating with somebody claiming ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. At the same time, he trashed the Tea Party. And this has forced the resignation today of Vivian Schiller, who is no relation to the other Schiller who resigned. She resigned today, the CEO of NPR. And of course, this will be grist for the mill in terms of the Republicans in the House who want to zero out funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So I suppose, Mark, we cannot underestimate the influence of these little political dirty tricks. They really have big consequences.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, political dirty tricks are as American as apple pie, and they go back all the way to the founding fathers. But what we have now, besides increased partisanship, is technological sophistication with hidden cameras that allow it to be done much more easily. I mean, this one can be interpreted through a political lens as yet another sort of right-wing attack going after liberals. But, you know, fundraisers, I suspect that if he had said outrageous, right-wing things, the fundraiser might have agreed, too, because that's what fundraisers do. They try to get along with people with big bucks who were promising to donate money.
Well, but I think he had to be a bit gullible because I'm surprised he didn't recognize this guy, O'Keefe. And I'm also surprised that he took a check that for a ton of money, I think millions of dollars, that was written on a P.O. box at a UPS drop, and that the foundation that supposedly supports the Muslim Brotherhood had no 501c3, no tax ID number. So, I suppose people who get stung, buyer beware, I suppose. But of course,
well, yeah, and there's that old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Well, I must say, though, on the other side of the political fence, where instead of this being a Republican hit against one of their favorite targets, in this case NPR, and prior to that Acorn, the recent prank phone call that the gullible governor of Wisconsin fell for and had a 20-minute conversation with an imposter posing as one of his biggest fundraisers or biggest donors, David Koch, that really got into the political zeitgeist. And my feeling is that when these things get into the political zeitgeist and get on YouTube, it's probably, in political terms, worth about 1,000 appearances on Meet the Press.
Well, I think that's right, because what you're doing is you're getting a glimpse of the way things really work as opposed to the canned responses on a show like Meet the Press. And in a sense, both of these stings, as contrived as they were, do peel back the layers of how things are done officially, whether it's sucking up and fundraising to lack of vetting in a desperate desire for bucks by a place like NPR, or, a politician who, publicly is this, putting out this persona of just focusing on doing his job, and then privately, you know, strategizing with his, you know, right-wing oil billionaire about, you know, how to screw the unions and screw the Democrats. And, you know, it peels the veneer off, the mask off of the more sanctimonious facades that are usually presented to the public.
Well, one of the people, of course, who's come out today feeling vindicated is Juan Williams, who was fired by NPR, not by Vivian Schiller, but by somebody else who also was fired, that in response to the Republican outrage over Juan Williams' firing, he, of course, is saying, oh, this is just shows you that NPR are just a bunch of white people and who look down on blacks and ordinary people. Of course, you could argue that Juan Williams' role at Fox News is exactly fits that description. Isn't he surrounded by white people on Fox?
Well, it's a predominantly a white audience as well as on-air crowd, although that's true. You know, it's not like the other networks are exactly, the proportions may be greater, but, you know, management particularly is white in almost all these places.
But what does it say to you about, Mark Feldstein, who teaches media and public affairs at George Washington University, formerly with CNN and ABC, what does this say to you about NPR in a way that they very quickly fired Juan Williams, very quickly fired the woman who fired Juan Williams because it was an outcry, and now fired Ron Schiller, who got punked or pranked by this O'Keefe Republican operator. And he also said, by the way, in this video, Ron Schiller, it's very clear that in the long run, we would be better off without federal funding. This is at a time when NPR is trying to make a case not to have their money cut. So my sense is that there's something sort of, inherently wrong with the culture at NPR, where because they are at the mercy of government funding and at the whims of Republicans who are routinely calling for their extinction, that they try so desperately not to have opinions that, you know, they've got to the point where they can't even be real human beings and have points of view.
Well, you know, obviously there's a lot of fear over at NPR about the Republicans in the House, Republicans taking over the House and wanting to cut the funding for NPR. And, you know, this is always the dilemma that public broadcasting faces. And it's, you know, it's true in the U.S., it's, you know, true in other countries as well, but the U.S., our culture, our DNA is much more, is much less sympathetic to the notion of public broadcasting, of government funding or taxpayer funding for kind of quality broadcasting. And so they get much less than say, the BBC does, but obviously they're running scared. And you know, a lot of these bloodlettings, like took place at NPR, occur at the for-profit networks, too, whenever there's a scandal. Heads roll and as the system tries to disassociate itself from the scandal. I don't think there's any evidence that Vivian Schiller, who resigned today, the head of NPR, really had any culpability involved in the fundraiser saying those things, but it was just because she'd come under assault for, you know, several other things, mostly on the Juan Williams case. It was kind of the final straw that broke the camel's back.
Well, but the serial firing, I think, indicates a kind of lack of moral fiber as opposed to, having principles and standing by the fact that we're not perfect we make mistakes. How many times have you seen these mea culpas from politicians who get caught? What about the guy down in Florida? I was going to say the governor of Florida being a mega crook, but the senator down in In Louisiana, they got caught with a hooker. And
well, politicians are very different from media organizations in that culture. I mean,
right. I see what you're saying.
If you ask Dan Rather how CBS handled the National Guard story, where he ended up losing his job over it, as did a number of other people, he would say that NPR doesn't have any monopoly on that kind of institutional reaction. Now, I'm not sure, which is not to equate the retracted story that CBS did with, the problems at NPR, but I do think institutional cultures of all kind, private and public, tend to operate in some similar ways, and that is to kind of isolate the person who's giving them the black eye, blame it on them and disassociate it from them if the cost is too high. I mean, it's a long way from Ben Bradley at the Washington Post when it was under fire for an actual mistake that Woodward and Bernstein made on their coverage, just hanging tough and saying, we stand by our story, we stand by our people. You don't see that very often in corporate media or in, as it turns out now, in NPR, in the public broadcasting.
Again, I'm speaking with Mark Feldstein, who's the author of Poisoning the Press, Richard Nixon, Jack Anderson, and the Rise of Washington Scandal Culture. For two decades, he was an award-winning investigative correspondent for CNN, ABC, and other news outlets, and he now teaches media and public affairs at George Washington University. But, Mark, you've brought up something which I'd really like to explore here in the Dan Rather case. There is a coincidence here. Dan Rather was a huge target for Brent Bozell and those right-wing Republican media watchdog groups, and they were after him for the longest time. And he claims that the stuff that he got was deliberately doctored. And then the other case is that the person that got fired was the head of CNN, Eason Jordan, who was again a target for Brent Bozell and these right-wing Republican media watchdog groups.
There's no question that the right wing has, in this country, going back to Nixon and before, developed a dirty tricks operation over the years. In fact, Dan Rather himself was a target of Richard Nixon personally. I write about these issues in my book. Nixon himself, the President of the United States, in the Oval Office, we know from the tape recordings, was ordering up dirty tricks against Rather, planting letters to try to get him fired, and Nixon aides were trying to get him fired, that kind of thing. So you're absolutely right. He's been a bête noire of the right for some time. And CBS ultimately... got rid of him, many years later after he crossed the Bush administration. So the right does seem to be more sophisticated at this than the left has been, notwithstanding, Governor Walker's, the prank call to Governor Walker.
But it's difficult in this current situation not to see a link between the sting by O'Keefe, who is a Republican operative. There's no question about it, whether he's an official member of any Republican group or not. And I'd be very interested to know who actually funds him. The timing of this sting coinciding with the House and Senate vote on zeroing out CPB is too coincidental. The knocking off Acorn, which was a very effective voter registration group, which literally mostly added to the Democratic ranks, which the Republicans didn't like. This guy is serving the Republican Party, the interests of the Republican Party, surely.
No question, and the old Watergate refrain, follow the money. It would be very interesting to know how all of this is being funded. There's an element of sophistication in the targets that are being picked, and they have definitely been hitting the solar plexus of the liberal left. We saw this with Clinton too, when Clinton was president, and these right wing groups, Richard Mellon Scaife, raised all, was donating millions of dollars for the so-called Arkansas Project, that, the sole aim of which was to discredit the Clintons. And, you know, eventually they succeeded, not with any corruption or policy issues, but with the sex scandal that led to his impeachment.
But I find it extraordinary that these people like O'Keefe, who was actually fined for breaking into Senator Landrieu's office, he's a hero. David Bossie, the guy that made the hit job film on Hillary the movie that became the basis of the Supreme Court Citizen United's decision. Prior to that, he worked for Dan Burton's committee, and he edited the prison tapes of Webb Hubble to incriminate Webb Hubble, and had to be fired for blatant distortion and the same kind of hit job that Andrew Breitbart did on that woman who was fired from the Agriculture Department. Again, very preemptively, when the Republicans attack somebody, the first instinct is to fire them, you know?
And it goes back even farther than that. You know, Bossie was working with a group that that was involved in, you know, again, in the Clinton stuff and some of the sex stuff. And even before that, the Willie Horton ad that ran against Dukakis and you know, was considered pretty pivotal in the first George Bush winning election as president. So there is definitely in the DNA there a dirty trick gene, and the dirty tricks of Richard Nixon and his acolytes, who are still players, you know, in contemporary times, live on.
And we've got through this whole interview without mentioning Karl Rove.
Well, Karl Rove got his start with Richard Nixon.
And Lee Atwater.
Roger Ailes, who runs Fox News, got his start with Nixon. Cheney, Rumsfeld. You know, they all go back to that that administration that, you know, the only president who had to resign in disgrace, and that's known for dirty tricks. Mm-hmm. So
I'm afraid
more subtly done now than it was done under Nixon, but who knows, if it weren't for the White House tapes, we may not know at all, you know, okay, the details of what Nixon did.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Mark Feldstein.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I'm going to be in L.A. on Wednesday doing a book signing at Book Soup.
Oh, well, come by and visit us. We'll make sure of that. Again, I was just talking with Mark Feldstein, who teaches media and public affairs at George Washington University and is the author of a new book, Poisoning the Press, Richard Nixon, Jack Anderson, and the Rise of Washington's Scandal Culture. Let me thank, this has been Background Briefing, and I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. I've also started a daily blog there. Go to ianmasters.com and click on blog, and then let me know what you think. I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.